Hello, this is Oliver Berkman, and I'm the author of the new book, Meditations for Mortals, 4 weeks to embrace your limitations and make time for what counts. I'm also the author of the book, 4,000 Weeks. The new book is about the gap that I think we all experience to some degree, and that certainly I know all too well, between the things we know we want to be spending our time on, what we want to be working on, how we want to show up for our lives and for the people in our lives, and how difficult it can feel to actually do those things right here in the midst of the overwhelm and the distractions and the anxiety-inducing news headlines. So here are 5 insights from the book on crossing that gap, on actually using our all-too-finite lifespans and finite capacities as human beings to do the things that matter the most to us. Insight 1 is that you're never going to get on top of everything. You're never going to sort your life out. And that actually, this is fantastic news. It's incredibly easy, as individuals and as organizations, for us to spend all our time chasing the fantasy that in a few months or maybe a few years, we're finally going to master this situation of how to live and work in the 21st century. We're going to find the productivity system that lets us do everything. Or we're going to finally solve our imposter syndrome by figuring out how to do our jobs or be excellent parents or spouses. We're going to fix our procrastination issues. Or we're going to get to the part of life where we no longer have any problems to deal with. And so on and so on. And the ironic and tragic result is that we actually hold off from taking the boldest action right now on the things that we care about the most. So my book outlines a philosophy that I call imperfectionism, which takes it as a given there will always be too much to do in our world of infinite inputs, that you'll never feel completely ready to meet new challenges, precisely because they're new challenges, that you might always be a bit of a procrastinator, that the future will always be unknowable and uncertain, and so on. And that once you begin to accept all this, that, in fact, is when you're free to act, imperfectly, but in reality, here and now. So it's about giving up this distracting quest to feel completely in control, completely secure, which in fact drains the vibrancy from life, and instead pouring your finite time, attention, and energy into a handful of things that truly count. Insight 2 is that everything is always a matter of trade-offs. One of the main reasons we don't get around to doing what we care about is that we tell ourselves there are things we have to do instead. Things we've signed up for, things people are waiting for from us, projects we've sunk too much money or time in to give up now, things that our culture demands of us. But in the book, I quote the psychotherapist Sheldon Kopp, making the brilliant point that, technically speaking, you don't have to do any of these things. Kopp writes, "You are free to do whatever you like. You need only face the consequences." Now, this isn't the corny old self-help idea that you're free to become a billionaire just by visualizing lots of money, or free to realize your dream of becoming an astronaut by plastering your bedroom wall with pictures of space. Instead, it's the down-to-earth point that in every moment of life, as finite humans, all we're doing is choosing one set of problems over another. If you leave a relationship or a job, or if you just delay replying to some emails in order to spend time with your kids, or you make any other kind of choice with your time, there's always going to be an upside and a price to pay. So the question isn't how to avoid any bad consequences whatsoever, or how to reach the perfect decision. It's just which price you're willing to pay. And something that's crucial here, I think, for anyone who's prone to being a bit of a people pleaser, is that other people's emotions are just one more factor to weigh in this balance. Is someone likely to judge you for your choice or get angry about it? Okay, that's not a catastrophe. The question is whether or not it's one of the consequences you're willing to shoulder in order to reap the benefits. Insight 3 is to finish things. I think there's a couple of reasons that we tend to begin a lot of projects and then not finish them, so that we end up burdened by all these zombie projects that we can't bring to a conclusion. The first is that for anybody with a perfectionistic streak, the part where you're beginning a new project feels wonderful. It's like walking into virgin snow. It's fresh, and it feels like there's still a chance to bring the work perfectly into reality. And then you start running into the truth that, in fact, any project, when you actually bring it into reality, is necessarily going to be imperfect. And so suddenly, it starts to seem incredibly appealing to start a new project instead. The other reason, I think, is that we hate to feel limited in how much we can do, even though we very much are. And so having 50 things on our plates, being too busy, in fact, gives us a sort of furtive payoff, a feeling of being important and super capable because look at all the things we're trying to do. The reality, though, is that there is an amazing surge of motivation and energy that comes from finishing things, from developing the ability to make all sorts of projects wait outside the door, as it were, while you take just one of them and see it through to completion. In the book, I explore various ways of doing that when it really feels like you can't afford to make those other projects wait. But in essence, the basic trick is to break them down into much smaller, completable, intermediate outcomes and then finish those. When you get granular enough with this process, you get to move from a situation where the delight of finishing things is something that only happens every few months at best, and move to a working life that is spent really doing nothing other than finishing things hour after hour, with all the extra energy and motivation that that can bestow. Insight 4 is to look for the life task. I tell a story about Carl Jung, one of the godfathers of psychotherapy, when he was an adolescent, hiding in the shrubbery of his family home and overhearing his father tell a family friend that he was really worried for his son's future because they'd lost all their money and Carl was refusing to go to school, and what would become of the boy if he couldn't earn a living? Jung describes being thunderstruck by the sense that in that moment, reality was asking something of him, that his life was demanding something of him, which in that case was to buckle down to his studies, and that's what he immediately did. But the point of this story is definitely not that hard work is always good. Plenty of us actually could do with finding more space in our lives for a bit of rest. No, instead, the point of the story is that it's often incredibly useful, especially if you're feeling stuck or directionless in life, not to ask what it is that you want from life, but what life is asking from you. What's the life task that faces you in this moment? Maybe that sounds a little woo-woo, but actually it's a powerful reframing that helps you get past all the normal human confusions about what might make you happy or not, and instead gets down to that deep intuitive level of what it is you feel you're here to do. The answer that arises when you ask what life task is facing you will very probably be something difficult and effortful, as Jung points out. But on the other hand, it will be possible. It will be something you can do here and now with the resources and the talents that you actually have. And so there will always be a path forwards. Insight 5 is that you have to start from sanity. That's a slightly cryptic phrase, perhaps, so let me explain what I mean. We tend to have a certain vision of how we want our lives to be. In my case, I'd like to be calm and productive, energized and inspired in my work, attentive to my family, doing my bit as a citizen of the world. That is what I'm calling here the state of sanity. But then we tend to tell ourselves that this is something we're working towards in the future, that we're not really there yet. And by taking that attitude, we actually prevent ourselves from attaining it. One simple example is where you decide perhaps that you need more space and more relaxation in your life. So you plan to take a sabbatical in 6 months' time, and meanwhile, you actually end up working much harder in an effort to get all of your projects out of the way in time. So you reinforce the frenetic way of living instead of the relaxed one. Or perhaps you've overcommitted yourself with appointments. So you say to yourself, look, I'm going to get all of these ones done, but in the future, I'm going to make fewer commitments. So then you dive off into just as many appointments as before. To start from sanity instead means deciding how you want to be in your life, and then at least in some small way, showing up in that fashion here and now. So it might mean finding 20 minutes for rest in your day today. It might mean renegotiating or backing out of some of those existing commitments, even if that causes a few issues, instead of just promising yourself you're going to do better later. Above all, it means remembering the imperfectionist truth that if some activity means a lot to you, even just doing it for 10 minutes today, however imperfectly, means infinitely more than all the plans in the world for doing it perfectly or regularly at some far-off hypothetical point in the future. Thanks so much for listening. I really hope you enjoy the book and that it can do something to help you show up for this life more fully right now.